This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we'll be concluding our coverage, for now, of the Salamanders with a dive into their chapter, basically what they've been up to for the last like 9,000 years, along with some fun with their successors, because GW did some weird work on their successor chapters. But
cool names, though. Also, some really
great names.
Really cool tech, though, too, because the Salamanders, let's put it out there first. Salamanders have made some cool stuff, and they kind of low-key didn't get credit for it also, but let's go.
That's true. Also, they not so low key don't get to use any of those rules in modern 40K. I know. I don't write the stupid rules. 40K Lorecast, weekly show in the Lord of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. If you like the show, follow and comment on it. I know you guys are all doing that already, but I got to keep saying it because it's hilarious to see how many positive reviews we have. Like, genuinely, I laugh about it with pride. So thank you all for doing that. Also, if you like the cast and want to hear more of Brad and I, click the link to our YouTube page. You'll find some of the early episodes converted over with imagery. We're pausing on that for a bit, guys, just because I want to do it better than I was doing it before. So we're looking at some other options. But our live Q&As, we have another one coming up in a little less than a month now. So end of December, we'll make a Christmas Q&A session, which will just consist of our regular Q&A sessions, but it's near Christmas.
Can't wait, everyone, to tell you about how the Q&A went, because the last Q&A, John and I were two old men arguing about how to push the button to start the car while we were already live on a wild delay.
Yeah, it wasn't the best. Anyway, if you want to help us be better at that, there's a link to our Patreon. Our Patreon is something that we utilize to get better audio engineers, possibly maybe have to hire someone so we can figure out how to use YouTube correctly and expand out that way. So a lot of you are already on the Patreon. Big thank you. There's also a separate channel in our Discord for it, FYI. The Patreon is $4.99 a month. That gets you this show and our History of 40K show ad-free, which is also 4.31 euros because Miami Vice, number one new hit show. Yeah. We're doing Bratislava today, and the only thing I know about Bratislava before I looked it up was Eurotrip, so we're doing this.
We'll buy my own hotel.
Exactly, which it kind of sucks because they're actually on the Euro now. It was a lot better when they were on whatever Slovenia's dollars were back before 2004. But if you're in Slovakia, Bratislava, it's the capital. It used to be the capital of all of Yugoslavia, which I'm not doing a history lesson on how that was a terrible idea. But if you're looking for a nice getaway, effectively, Bratislava has two cool things going for it. If you like walking and you like pancakes, Bratislava is a spot for you. It's the smallest capital city in Europe, so great for walking around. You've got the Danube River right there, so really beautiful walk. It's incredible. And they like to rock out on crepes, or as we call them in America, little tiny pancakes. In fact, I had to look this up because someone recommended it on Reddit. There's a store in Bratislava called Mr. Pancake, and they have 8,000 reviews on Google. So you should check that out if you're ever in Bratislava and let me know, because I have a big sweet tooth and some of the stuff they make there looks epic.
Sigh. Oh. Things I can't eat.
Oh, yeah.
An entire store of not bread food.
I mean, I hate to bring you. The thing about having celiac is basically every restaurant is just not for you.
Thanksgiving was my favorite holiday, but it was so much more poo because of,
You had potatoes, right?
Yeah. No, I got food that I can eat. I'm just saying, like, the stuffing and the...
No bread.
Yeah.
No bread. No, yeah.
It makes it just not a Thanksgiving mojo.
Yeah.
But...
Poo. All right. Last piece, always, Discord. Please, guys, come into our Discord. It's actually where we get a lot of ideas for shows. The end of the show, I'll tell you guys what we're covering next. That was because of our Discord. We do this a lot. Discord is totally free, by the way. I've been yelled at for this in a while, so let's do it again. It is a totally free place, our Discord, because I don't believe anyone should be charging for a Discord, despite a few people getting really mad at me for saying that, and I don't care. I stand by my statement. Discord should be free.
I love everything about you just firing it up of, I haven't got to fight with anybody in a little while. Let's do this.
It's all right. I spent the last week on Discord trying to defend my position of not liking Terminator 2. And by the way, gonna die on that hill. So
anyway. I mean, you could die on a wrong hill. The hill will be called Mount You're Wrong, John.
Terminator 2 is like 30% awesome, 40% garbage, and then like 30% meh. That's the problem with the movie.
If you would get drug tested right now, they would find that you're on all of them.
Every time John Connor speaks, the movie gets worse.
You're not wrong there. But
there we go. That's my point. Yeah. Arnold's amazing in it, but there is that element. So let's get back into Salamanders. Vulcan's gone. That's the most important piece here. We spent most of our first couple casts just kind of talking really about Vulcan. And so now I want to spend some time with letting some other Salamanders shine. Again, Salamanders are amphibians, so neophytes would be called tadpoles.
Well, let's talk about one of the biggest things here, which is, the Salamanders have been, for me, very awesome. And from the beginning and ever most, they just keep get thrown into the fire, you know, to the name of them. But they really start, I don't know if the Emperor had a grudge against them, but their numbers stayed very, very low. And they just kept getting into these crazy engagements. And again, we talked about them from before even they got their Primarch and the fact that they were just so big on sacrificing themselves to save others. This continues. They kind of have a higher casualty rate while doing this.
Yeah. The thing about the Salamanders is they effectively were very heavily on the back foot at the end of the Heresy. Them and Raven Guard obviously both just got demolished. Actually, I guess Iron Hands did too. But for whatever reason, the Salamanders, instead of retreating back and building up, just kept getting pulled into crap. So they never got a real chance to get themselves up to full size like Raven Guard and Iron Hands have. Although, I mean, they're both also smaller legions, obviously, as well, but not as bad as Salamanders. But let's get into some the Salamanders notes. Gilliman pushes for Codex Astartes. Vulcan, interestingly, we're talking about a lot of stuff, was one of the ones who pushed back. And everyone had their own reason. Most of them were just pride and power, like Dorn and Russ didn't see why they should do what Gilliman wanted because they couldn't see themselves as being any more loyal. And they felt Gilliman's concept was almost an affront to their honor, saying, you have to break up my legion in case I'm not loyal to the Emperor. What do you mean I'm not loyal to the Emperor? Did you see all the stuff I just did for the Emperor? The Vulcans was actually a little bit different. He was actually almost sad. The Salamanders had just started getting their legion back. They're nowhere at this stage, too. But post Istvan, you're probably talking 10,000 or less Salamanders left in the galaxy. I mean, it might be less than 1,000, if I'm being honest. I really don't know. But
they were considered wiped out at the point of the beginning of the Heresy. They were just gone.
And Vulcan, remember, when he joined the Salamanders, they were at a small size because they'd still struggled to recover and they'd been doing all these rearguard actions. Vulcan had always dreamed of having a legion like his brothers, but governed by the Promethean cult, so it would be better than the others. It was a real ability to expand out and conquer the galaxy, you know, what the Ultramarines actually did.
Now, the Promethean cults are pretty awesome. There's a lot of, things inside the Marine Legions that are just meh, but the Promethean cults actually do like a really good job of determining what it is to be a Salamander. I like that quite a bit.
Exactly. And so Vulcan's looking at this going, hey, if I can only have 1,000, and actually, by the way, guys, I just realized I was wrong. There were less than 700 after Istvan V Salamanders in the galaxy.
So I said they were almost gone. Not
ideal. Yeah, this is not ideal. What Vulcan wanted was to take that and build it back to the Super Legion. And with the Codex Astartes, he's never going to be able to. Yeah, unless he wants to do the Black Templar thing.
And just roll out everywhere he wants.
They won't figure it out. The interesting thing is the Salamanders did not have a founding until M35, which is 4,000 years after the second founding, where they founded the Black Dragons.
I was just about to say, what did they found, though? Cool.
The Black Dragons, who were a cursed founding, which we'll talk about them later. And then the Salamanders, that was their only successor until the Ultima founding, where all the Primaris Marines came out, and they still only got four more then. So there's only five successor chapters in the book for the Salamanders. The Ultramarines, for the record, did five successor chapters in one founding, like a couple times.
I do like the fact that the Salamanders, all of their successor chapters, have some pretty good history, and they've done some cool stuff.
All but two.
Well,
all but two. Two of them are just present.
Yeah. My bad on that one, guys. Yeah. I'm like, I've played them on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know it's not the quote, but I'm sure you're a big Meatloaf fan. Like, three out of five ain't bad, too. You know? But so for today's cast, though, we're going to jump around a little bit, covering some stuff we didn't cover the last couple of casts. I think is interesting, especially stuff. What I like to focus on in these casts is, all right, if you're playing against Salamanders and you walk up and someone's got something, do you know what that is? Not from a competitive, who gives a crap standpoint, but from a, oh, that's kind of interesting. Oh, you have a special dreadnought. You are running Black Dragon. So we're going to get into some of those today. But speaking of dreadnought, I want to start with Cassian Vaughn, who later becomes Cassian Dracos, because this story is just cool as hell. So Cassian Vaughn. Cassian Vaughn, if you remember, was the original chapter master of the 18th Legion. He was leading them during the Unification Wars, and then he led them up until the arrival
of Vulcan. And Vulcan was very, very cool about the transfer, too.
Oh, yeah. Cassian's awesome. So Cassian, at the time of the transfer, he gets mortally wounded fighting the orcs. And Vulcan's actually sad about it. He never met this guy in his life, but he's sad about it because he's been following the 18th Legion. He knows how incredible they've been, because they've really, even without him being there, they held up a lot of the ideals that he believed in, and that's because of Cassian. So after the battle, Vulcan sees that Cassian's dying, and he creates a sarcophagi that would entomb Vaughn in the dreadnought. He doesn't just build a sarcophagi, though. He builds a bit more than that, and this dreadnought is, I believe it's the first venerable. Is that right, Brad?
Well, they eventually use this as the prototype for the Redemptor, because it's so heavy. This is what on the table would be Braith Ashmal, who's the current person entombed in this dreadnought, the captain of the fourth company.
Yeah.
Ogor Braith.
And we'll get to him in maybe 10 minutes.
But the thing is like Vulcan, this is an awesome thing for the time. This is so much. This is a durable. Mm-hmm. It's also heavily. He's an inscribed. It's beautiful. It's like he made it St. Peter's Basilica.
It's a model.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
You guys can buy a lot of him plastic too.
Yeah. He does this dreadnought, which is amazing. And it's the first, it's the Iron Dragon. The Iron Dragon is what he's entombed in. And this dreadnought is a feat of, I feel it should have probably been one of his artifacts, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? It's pretty awesome. And he starts wrecking people in it. So let's talk about
it. Yeah, he's awesome. So when he gets into the dreadnought, Cassian Vaughn changes his name to Cassian Dracos. I don't know why. I think that's something to do with the dreadnought, but he does. Not important. He then joins Vulcan on the trip back to Nocturne.
Wow.
Once back on Nocturne, starts learning about the Promethean cult, all this stuff, and he's big fan.
But let's pop this in, because Cassian, unlike most dreadnoughts, even when they wake up Bjorn, they don't wake him up all the time. Cassian stays alert and awake for a lot longer than most dreadnoughts do.
Yeah.
Because he starts teaching and telling people about things. And also, you know, he is wearing dreadnought boots of mighty ass kicking, which I don't know what the upgrade points on that. Are they boots of mighty ass kicking plus +3? I really don't know on this one, because they have to be better for a dreadnought.
Well, they are better, because what we're going to cover next is, after spending some time with his legion, the call comes in about Istvan III, and the legion goes to go basically stamp out the traitors. And Cassian is present at Istvan V. And when the betrayal begins, as the Salamanders are retreating back up, and I forget who fired upon them first, but who cares? Cassian takes that personally.
Yeah. He puts at least a 4 extra pumps into the boots, mighty ass kicking. It decides that, hey, man, you know what the best trader is? A burnt trader, because he turns the flavors on him and starts going nuts.
This dreadnought is awesome because it has 2 power fists, which is cool in lore, useless on the tabletop, just is, and some super flamers in it. And he just starts roasting traitors and smacking them in the head to the point where the trap that they've sprung stops working very well because the salamanders start gaining ground despite having the low ground. And, you know, being massively outgunned because the world's angriest dreadnought is pissed. At a certain point, this is when Horus has to appear on the battlefront. And Horus starts moving forward. Cassian knows Horus because when he was alive, they actually served together. And starts beelining towards him. And in the book, it's pointed out that Horus actually recognizes Cassian through, like, you know, the gap in the dreadnought and goes, oh. And then he hits him in the chest with a giant thunder hammer and knocking him to the ground.
Yeah. To again, the ultra dreadnought mojo, this should have any other dreadnought Horus was hitting with that would have been just gone.
Well, that's part one. So Taurus hits the dreadnought, knocks unconscious. Then that dreadnought gets nuked like everything else. After the battle of Istvan V, the salamanders are back on Nocturne and they just like, hey, we haven't heard anything from the people we sent to Istvan. Does anyone want to check on this? And they decide to send out some ships. I don't love this story. It's Horus Heresy Book 6 called Retribution because it takes them forever to get there. But they send one of the ships they send is called the Ebon Drake. And this one becomes very important. It's a super ship designed by Vulcan himself that makes the journey. All right. Once it eventually gets there, they see their legion totally destroyed, but they find like almost a beacon or like a light pulse and they go and investigate, and under the rubble they find Cassian, you know, they find the dreadnought, and the dreadnought is actually self-repairing.
I was just about to pull
Vulcan
that
and built it.
We should have said that in the beginning, because one of but it's such a cool thing of the awesomeness of his artificer, you know what I mean? Made this self-repairing metal. He basically made Necrod self-healing metal.
Yeah.
And this is why the dreadnought it still exists on that. Yeah. Which is, I just think this is such a cool thing.
It's this dreadnought's in lore awesome. Again, tabletop. Meh. But what's no funny about this is
now, but whatever.
Is he Legends now? Even what's his nuts is Legends?
I think it probably
the new one is Legends.
I have to go look.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. We'll look later. But what I like about this is Drakos wakes up and he's in a mood. That's the best way to spend it. He turns, looks at everyone, and the entire surface of Istvan, there's a couple, like, it's destroyed. But they find a few other random survivors, some Raven Guard, some Iron Hands, might have been even 1 or 2 salamanders. And they grab Drakos, they grab these people, and they bring them on this ship called the Ebon Drake. What's even crazier about the dreadnought, though, is that it has a weird effect on everyone around it.
Even on the machinery and stuff, though, too.
Yep, everything. It seems like everything warms to his presence. So as this dreadnought is walking through the ship, the electronics of the ship actually are better powered when it's in his presence. You know, your servitors work better.
Yeah, he has a machine affinity, but he also has a morale beacon around. He himself is a beacon of, we've got this, guys. Everybody gets the pat on the back when he's around.
So he, in effect, because of this ability, rallies the troops who are there. And this is, again, ragtag group, and says, all right, this traitor thing has to stop.
Let's pause on this, though, because I do think this is a big deal for what is happening, because of the fact that you got to remember, this is a group that just got betrayed by their most trusted brother, and a thing that was just unthinkable. And also, you're in real danger of not having a legion for some of these. You know what I mean? You're picking up the remnants of who you are, your brothers, you know? And his presence is making all these people ready for action as opposed to ready for despair and throwing in the towel.
He kind of makes Death Watch Mark 0.0,
yeah,
because that's what it's just a collection of them with one purpose, and that's to go and wreck some traitors. So he and this like Motley Crue, which is a terrible band for the record. Terrible.
You know what? Band. I will kickstart your heart as I'm going home, sweet home, my friend.
So bad, Brad. So bad. Anyway, they get together and they rename themselves the Disciples of the Flame. And Disciples of the Flame, we've got a name, we've got a ship, we've got a purpose. Let's go wreck some traitors. And they begin just basically searching the galaxy for problems. And the first place they find is what's called the Mezoan Campaign. And this, I like this storyline, as you guys can tell. This is a forge world, which is critical for the war effort because they make armaments and spacecraft. So it's also weird because they've got moons that are blockaded and not blockaded. But long story short, Alpha Legion Iron Warriors are there. And they're there to convince the forge world to turn traitor. And it's in the forge world. Could not care less which side they're on, for being honest. They're going, all right, as long as you guys can give me cool supplies, I'll make stuff and you can take it. I just want to do my Mechanicum stuff here. Disciples of the Flame come in. They've got some Imperial support with them.
Also,
big
cool.
Battle.
Well, this is still a cool name. Except the fact that this is a cool name. Disciples of the Flame. Basically, these guys are the Expendables. I don't know who's supposed to be who.
I like Disciples of the Flame a lot. It's a super cool army. If I played 30K, I would build Disciples of the Flame army. Candidly, I just don't play 30K because 7th edition rules were terrible. But with all these... Now, what they do then is they have this big space battle. They start losing the space battle. So then Cassian and his, I hate this word, retinue.
Ugh. Well done.
Yeah, retinue. I'm genuinely gun-shy to the point where for this cast, I looked up other words and they weren't great. You had companions. You had a court.
Let's go with your third. Yeah. I'm reading this when I said you sent it over. I'm like, companions, not bad. Court of the Flame would have been kind of a cool thing to call him. And then you're like, I ran out of synonyms. I'm going to go with groupies. You're like, groupies, no.
Yeah, just, Cassian and his groupies. That's but there's actually a better word. And it's even harder. Cortege, C-O-R-T-E-G-E.
Wow.
Cortig. Exactly. So I can't even use that one because I can't even start to pronounce that one correctly. So we're back on retinue.
That was impressively wrong, but continue.
Ooh, I know. Anyway, good God. I have friends with English degrees. I should just ask them, but whatever. All right. So Cassian just goes, him and retinue go badass style. They land. He just goes running.
Okay.
Dreadnought style.
You're not giving it to him enough because in my mind, he's like doing a backflip off, you know, when they do they flip out of the airplane and everybody's, you know, doing their things on. He drops down.
He was in a drop pod.
Yeah.
He was in a drop pod.
In my mind, the drop pod does a couple flips and looks super cool. It does some point break stuff. And then he lands and immediately starts sprinting and YOLO swaggins the door. I'm assuming just Kool-Aid man's through it, not stopping.
Oh, he 100% just Kool-Aid man's into the leaders of the Mechanicum on the planet. And I love this scene because he gets in there and no one says anything. They all just look up at what is the greatest built dreadnought in the entire galaxy and just go, yeah, whatever this guy wants, we're on this team. Like, we're done. Just full stop. This is you brought, because they effectively saw him as a sub deity. Walked into the room. It was like, I want your attention. They're like, you can have anything from us. Like,
can we take a sample of whatever the hell you're made of? Pretty much.
Yeah. But this happens. And of course the traitors are notified pretty quickly of the middle finger gets sent to them by the Mechanicum of, we're not joining you. And now they have to go do something about it. So in classic Alpha Legion style, the Alpha Legion convinces the Iron Warriors to go get them, guys. And then you go in this way, and then we're going to come in the backside and hit them. So the Iron Warriors, because they're stupid, and I'm sorry, they just are. This happens to Iron Warriors all the time, go full bore, frontal assault into a Mechanicum Forge world that has now been reinforced by the Disciples of the Flame. It doesn't go great. And as they're just getting wrecked.
It doesn't go great because the Alpha Legion, you remember that time when they were joining you in this pincer move? Well, it's hard to make a pincer when half of the pincer goes somewhere else to do the thing that they really wanted to do.
Yeah. The Alpha Legion, actually, it's a funny double failure. The Alpha Legion ditched the Iron Warriors to go and try and cut the head off the snake by killing one of the Mechanicum leaders. it has a little bit of an effect, but not a lot, because again, there's a god on the planet as far as the Mechanicum is concerned, and they're going to keep following that thing. But I love what happens next. Cassian realizes this, and he, instead of just wiping out the Iron Warriors, he sends a message to them saying, hey, let's meet. And so he and Narek Dragor, who's there, he's the leader of the Iron Warriors there, meet. And Cassian just looks at him and tells him, look, the Alpha Legion betrayed you. Everyone's going to betray you. What are you doing here? And it's such a good move that Narek looks around, goes back to his Legion and says, why are we doing this? We're not traitors. And he and his Legion then have their own mini Istvan 3, because they murder everyone who disagrees with them. They kill them all, and then they go join. They declare that Petarobo's an a-hole, and then they go and join the Disciples of the Flame, making this look like even larger, who then go and attack the Alpha Legion, who have to retreat. And this is, that's like one of the only stories of this, by the way, in the Horus Heresy, of a traitor legion flipping sides. Now, what's funny about that is that we don't know what happens after that. The reason we don't know is the Imperium has redacted everything post this, because the viewpoint is, if you have a story where the traitors become loyalist, that's actually not good for the narrative of the Imperium.
Yep.
And so the Inquisition has wiped out all records of it post this. But what we do know is the Disciples of the Flame existed, and the Salamanders, they have some private records on this matter that I don't have access to. Now, the story then concludes quickly, because we don't know what happens. All we know is that the Ebon Drake, the ship of the
Disciples of the Flame,
gets wrecked at some point. And in that wreckage, it sounds like Cassian dies. Well, Cassian is deceased at some point.
This cast, by the way, I keep wanting to call the Ebon Drake the Ebon Hawk, and then play some Coder.
Of course you do. Yeah. It is a good game. It's a really good game. The second port that they made for Steam plays really well. The first one does not, unfortunately. But that's a side note for another day. What happens then is the Salamanders take Cassian's dreadnought and they rename it the Iron Dragon. And the Iron Dragon gets handed down, and it has been for the last 9,000 years, 8,000 years, however long it's been since Cassian passed. But only the most noble of Salamanders can be entombed in this, because Vulcan did make it himself. And it's, well, again, in lore, it's badass. On tabletop, it sucks. But it's currently on Braeth Ashmantle.
For a while, it was good. No, because he was like super good, because it was a dreadnought with a feel no pain.
Oh, that's right. Which it should be. Yeah. Should be
a, no, I mean, it should be broken. I mean, this, it, the dreadnought itself is not indestructible. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, whatever.
That was a fun 2 months before GW went, yeah, those are out of the game. No, never again. All right. But Braeth Ashmantle, real quick on him, he is just a super badass. And to give an example of what it takes to earn the right to be entombed in the Iron Dragon, the story on Braeth is really badass. Braeth is doing a campaign against the Black Legion and some mutants on this city. The Black Legion go to retreat into the sub-city to hide, and because they're just getting their butts kicked. And Braeth goes, yeah, the only good heretic's a dead heretic. And he solos after them. 9 days later, he comes like Kool-Aid man style, bursting out of the sub-level, having killed every single Black Legionnaire and mutant down there. And he's covered in ash. That's why it's called Ashmantle, because he broke through all the ducts and that kind of stuff to get there. Which is a cool story until you remember that someone's got to do maintenance down there, and he probably could have just come out the way he went in, you know, just throwing it out there. And instead, he just was like, nah.
Which is, I'll do a side real quick for us, because that makes me think of this all the time with the Marines. It's the same thing when you see all the videos about normal people when the Avengers were in.
Yes. Yeah. It's hilarious.
In New York, yeah. They're like, yeah, man, I hate you. You just threw a car through my apartment. I feel like that's what happens a lot when Marines show up and they're like, yeah, man, I have no place to live. And you blew up my place I work at. And they're like, we've saved the day.
Through someone's house on his way out. Everyone was dead. All of the enemies were killed. He could have just gently gone home. Nah, I'm taking as the crow flies.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
40K Lorecast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings may vary. Not available in all states or situations.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
After him, let's jump on to really, I don't think you guys understand how incredibly funny this disappointment was for those of us who know Salamander fans. In early 2025, we got a hint about some Salamanders coming out.
We got a hint that Vulcan was coming back.
Yeah, because we had some imagery. The truth is, like, all of us, I wasn't 100% we were going to get Vulcan back, but I thought we'd at least get a Codex. We didn't even get that. But the best one was they announced, you know, a new Vulcan model, but it's not Primarch Vulcan. It's Vulcan, and I'm going to get this Hestan name wrong. Hestan? No, I'm going with He-Stan. It's easier for me to pronounce it that way. It's Heston? Nah. Heston Blumenthal? Good chef.
Other, really good how chef. About this? Thick other glasses. Vulcan?
So, aside from the Chapter Master, with the other top title within the Salamanders is Forge Father. And the Chapter Master's role is to lead the Salamanders. The Forge Father is kind of almost a caretaker of their legacy, like a historian.
Let's be honest. The Forge Father, the Chapter Master leads the chapter. The Forge Father leads the chapter.
Exactly. Yeah. The Chapter Master, hey, we're going here. And everyone's like, is this a good idea? And the Forge Father kind of gives like the thumb up, thumb down. All right. Yeah. Well, then we'll keep listening to him. The Forge Father is cool because he's a more of an Indiana Jones, Nathaniel Drake than a real historian, because he's also searching for artifacts and expanding the chapter. The history on them is cool. The first one is a tech marine named Tikal. And Tikal worked with Vulcan on the forges of Nocturne, creating weapons, creating armor, doing all this stuff. And eventually Vulcan creates this title called Forge Father and gives it to Tikal because it's basically his number one forge buddy. That's what I'll go with here. On what's critical about this is that once the heresy breaks out and Vulcan decides to go to Istvan, he tells Tikal, I need you to collect everything that you and I ever built and destroy it. I want all of it destroyed.
Which is because he was, he's worried about them being grabbed by the hand, basically falling into the hands of traitors. I think this could have been handled a lot differently because this is a big, hey man, all our awesome stuff, just destroy it just in case. Can't we use it against them? But
nope.
He does agree to have seven saved from destruction.
Yeah, you keep seven. I don't know where the nine artifacts of Vulcan, how we get that departure, but that's another day. He keeps seven of them. Later, Tikal's kind of a badass, gets infected by a scrap code by a Mechanicum because they didn't know the Mechanicum had gone traitor. So a mechanic emissary visits and actually infects Tikal because he's a tech marine with a scrap code, which Tikal, as the code's going through his system, because he wanted him to open the vault and get access to those seven, shoots himself in the head with a plasma pistol.
Which becomes more badass because he straight up shoots himself with a plasma pistol and goes, I didn't hear no bell. And the scrap code apparently got wrecked by me plasming part of my head off. Yep. I'm cool. I'm going to walk this off.
But he's not done then, because later he's on a ship with actually the Iron Hands of all people, and then commands the Salamanders back on the planet to blow the ship up that he's on. Which I think is because he was worried about the scrap code spreading. This is not one of the better books, guys, so I didn't feel like rereading it for the cast. There's something going on there. But this then creates a legacy of the Forge Father. And Forge Father, as you expect, changes hands every time someone dies. Interestingly, though, a bunch of them have been dying recently. And so in M41, and we'll get to why in a second, An M41 he stan takes over. It's going to annoy people. That's fun. He takes over. He'd been the captain of the fourth company and a long history of just being an awesome salamander because he was exceptional scout. Then he was a good Marine. He was a good leader. But as a Forge father, a couple of key things about him. First one, he carries with him the Spear of Vulcan.
I don't care what the notes say or what we're doing, John. We're definitely talking about the fact that he's carrying the Spear of Vulcan, which is significantly larger than he is.
Yes. And he's carrying it because a certain person really wants it. And the only way for him to keep it safe is to carry it around with him. And that certain person is Trazen the Infinite. Trazen has been murdering Forge Fathers for a millennia plus, trying to steal all of Vulcan's artifacts, because Trazen is the most British historian of the entire 40K universe. All he wants to do is find all the artifacts and put them in his collection so that they're not wasted on the silly people who created them.
Yep.
And He Stan and Trazen actually had personal one-on-one combat that He Stan won at least once, if not twice. And I like He Stan. It is, unfortunately, the lore is really good, then horrifyingly disappointing, because he's devoted all of his energies to reading the Tomb of Fire, which is this impossible tome of knowledge written by Vulcan.
It's not only that, though. It's got all kinds of different clockwork pieces and everything else. It's not just words.
and it's coded, and so no one can fully understand it, and blah, blah, blah. The reason I go blah, blah, blah is that he keeps trying to read it and understand it, and just you read a book, and he's like he's getting on the path. He's figured out this. He's unlocked that, and then it's always a dead end.
I mean, the thing that I hold this the most to, and you go with Star Wars fans, this is like a Sith holocron.
Yeah, no, it is. It's just, it's just one of those, hey, either he can read this or he can't. Stop making me read books where at the end of the book, he doesn't
open. Because then you have to bring real Vulcan back.
Yeah. All right, now let's jump into, next one I want to jump to is Adrax, or as I call him, Peacemaker.
Yeah, dude. I'll explain. Now, this might be my favorite salamander character on the board. He wants to put the beats down. He has, I say he puts on his boots and my ass kicking, he puts on the superhero boots that go halfway up your thigh. And
he's also the grumpiest of the entire side.
Oh, 100%. Also carrying a comically big hammer and wanting to go put the beats on people.
Yeah. Edrax is classic GW writing. Every stage of his career, he's fought and survived against overwhelming odds. He always survives, but a lot of his compatriots don't. So he's a sergeant on the world of Scoria. On that world, both of his captains die, so he then becomes captain.
Default captain.
Default captain. Later, he's with He Stan, fighting against the Drukhari to reclaim like Vulcan's sigil or not have it stolen, whatever those are. And fun one, by the way, I should mention, He Stan speaks Drukhari. Random, but he does. So he's fighting there. Bunch of salamanders die.
Little Vulcan's kind of cool, by the way. He's like an actual...
Oh, Little Vulcan's really cool.
He's just a scholar.
He's Indiana Jones. He's a Green Beret Indiana Jones.
He's like a very learned man and gets into some crazy stuff.
Yeah, if you take the character, so Arnold Schwarzenegger played Commando, if you mix that one, which I would say, is it Frank Dux? No, that's Predator.
No.
Whatever. But anyway.
That's Bloodsport, by the way.
Bloodsport, damn it, not even close. I could look all this up, but I'm not going. But anyway, you take Arnold Schwarzenegger Commando and you mix him with Indiana Jones and put those together, that's Vulcan. Adrax is just a badass. So the next one he does is there's something called the Dragon Wars. In the Dragon Wars, remember how I said that Salamanders only had one successor, or early on? They got a second one because there was a traitor group, their traitor brethren called the Dragon Warriors, who are made up of a former librarian apprentice of the Salamanders who turned to the Ruinous Powers. Adrax is one of the key players in these Dragon Wars. The two fight against each other. So Adrax just starts continuously seeing some shit. And this has over time kind of broken his brain a little bit. He's not crazy. He's just very, very stoic and a hell of a warrior, which becomes this ironic statement about him. Because they say he's the most Vulcan of all of the current Salamanders.
Except for the fact that he's the king of collateral damage, which is not very Salamander.
Well, and that's what's great about him, because he's this super stoic warrior who just fights. And when he fights, he just wins. And he relies only on himself. He never really relies on anyone else to do anything for him. He basically is Vulcan personified in modern era. Except he really doesn't care about other people. He wants nothing in the galaxy more than peace and safety for the members of the Imperium. And he doesn't care how many members of the Imperium he has to kill in order to achieve that peace. Oh, Peacemaker is a great show.
Indeed it is.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a bit more about, from those characters, little quick hits through the last, since basically M32, what the Salamanders have been up to. All right. So, as we said before, they are one of the smallest playable factions of all the Space Marines in total numbers. Even post-Ultima founding, I think they're still smaller than both Raven and Iron Hands. Now, why? Because they keep just getting pulled into crap.
Crazy crap. Yeah. Oh, we covered this a big amount in the Drakkari cast, where
Oh, yeah. This is hilarious. So,
I mean, you're going to lose some Salamanders when you decide to YOLO Swaggins the Dark City. Yeah,
this is awesome. So M35, the Salamanders are in effect minding their own business. They're just doing their stuff in the galaxy. Meanwhile, inside the Dark City, Vect has been rising. He finally wants to get rid of the noble classes. And in order to do that, he has to effectively create a giant conflict inside the city. He doesn't have the numbers for it, so he decides, I know what I'll do. I'll use the humans. And he puts together this, really, it is a very genius plan. He begins over-raiding an area. So usually when the Drukhari do their real space raids, they'll hit an area and then they'll go to a different area well after, so as to prevent a buildup of forces. But he didn't want that. So he starts raiding really heavily in the Desiderian.
Well, and he also made it a Salamander protected area because he knew that they would come in force.
And so the Salamanders eventually counter one of the raids and they bring in their strike cruiser called Forge Hammer. Vect had a plan though. As soon as Forge Hammer arrives, he attacks Forge Hammer, not to blow it up, but to capture it. And they do, with Marines inside, by the way. A lot of Marines, because he wanted that. So they grab the Forge Hammer and they bring it back in through the Webway Gate into Commerce as this ultimate prize. As soon as he does, all in Nobility and Dark City say, no, 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 you are this lowborn nothing. That's ours.
You know, which he gives them the double guns and goes, no problem. It's all yours, bros.
Go ahead and have it. And as soon as the Nobility get to the ship, they discover the ship's full of fully armed Salamanders who are not cool with this so far. And there's been a tracking beacon in there. So out of nowhere, the Webway gets breached by the Salamanders along with Howling Griffins and Silver Skulls. And the sky above Kamara explodes. Both sides are having terrible losses. Vect, by the way, his forces go back to the Undercity for a little bit here. And this giant conflict goes up. It's cool as hell, but I love the end of it. Because the end of it is the Salamanders regain control of Forge Hammer. They retreat back. Them, the Griffins, the Silver Skulls, retreat back to the Webway.
Going to Indiana Jones, there's no way they're not. Start the engines, Jock! Start the engines!
But the part I love is as they're going through the Webway, they kind of turn around and with this great middle finger back, just fire off a few nukes right into the middle of Commerce and go out the other side. Just F you guys. Boom. Right?
Screw you guys. I'm going home. Just bam.
And right afterwards, by the way, is when Vect attacks and takes.
And just takes complete control of Commerce. Yeah.
So now another millennia goes by because Salamanders lost a ton of people in this fight, by the way. So another, because Vect wasn't trying to preserve the Salamanders this whole process. It wasn't like, oh, you know, don't worry, guys, you'll be okay. He killed a lot of them. So millennia goes by and the Salamanders are getting back on the good foot. They're ready to go. and Goj Van Deer. So Goj Van Deer has risen to power and he's trying to show off a little bit. And one thing about Goj was he really believed that he could have the people behind him. And the way he did this was by constantly labeling people heretics. Goj has a lot of, it's a British writing thing, but he's got a lot of Red Scare in it with, what is that senator's name?
McCarthyism.
Yeah. With a lot of McCarthyism kind of going around the same time, constantly accusing people being traitors, anyone who he mildly disagreed with or thought could be a problem. So he then has a right-hand man named Perignot, who goes out to just marketable as heretics. Thing about the Salamanders is that the Promethean cult is not entirely with keeping with the Imperial Creed. Yeah, it's not a religion, it's a philosophy.
It's a philosophy, but it's also a philosophy that's been working pretty awesome because it's about stoic selflessness, attaining personal perfection, being just relying on yourself being the best so you can help your brothers, you can help the other people around you, basically by being personally the best. But it's not just quoting the Imperial Creed. And it's one of those things of, yeah, man, leave those people alone, which is what everybody does now with that.
Yeah, the viewpoint of the Promethean Creed and current is, look, the Salamanders aren't preaching anything against the Imperial Creed. They just have the Imperial Creed and something else underneath it. So we're good. Anyway, Perignot felt differently. And without any declaration, by the way, shows up. And there's a bunch of Salamanders on a hive world called New Folly, five companies of Salamanders, a lot of them. And Perignot shows up with three full orders of sisters, which is bigger, by the way. So those three sisters are bigger than five companies.
A lot.
And a giant army of faith. And they start attacking. The Salamanders initially don't want to fight against the Imperium. So they start retreating. Like, hey, look, all right, let's just get back to fortifications. Perignot then declares the whole planet as heretical.
And that's where he effed up because he decides that they're just going to wreck the whole place and the Salamanders are not cool with them trashing the entire planet and all, again, they're going to protect the
and killing the all the innocents.
Right. Exactly. And they're like, we were just going to leave now. No, ain't going out like that.
So the Salamanders now counterattack into the Sisters in the Army of Faith. And you get this massive pitched battle, which ends hilariously because while this whole thing's happening, the Inquisition had realized Goj is an issue and saw that Perignot, however you pronounce his name, had left effectively the protection of Goj because now he's not on Terra anymore. And they sent an inquisitorial agent there. And the inquisitorial agent is an assassin and Perignot is killed.
Quickly.
And as soon as Perignot is killed, the fighting stops because it's like they basically say, yeah, they go to the sisters. That guy was a heretic. And the fighting ceases.
Which has to be such a wacky thing of, oh, so this is awkward. So my bad. Yeah. We'll see you later. I don't know if you're still showing up for Christmas, but let's see. Take it easy. Just I'm going to get in my ship and go away.
So Salamanders do take part in some of more of the fighting during this, the Goj Van Deer era, but it ends, they start rebuilding. So 2000 years of rebuilding. During this rebuilding, the Black Dragons are done. So their first founding, we have a successor chapter and we'll talk more about them in a minute. It's not bad. Just didn't go great. Then M39 war comes back. Orc warlord Ruk Ripa here's with three Space Hulks. And Ruk Ripa is just cool as hell.
Just letting you know that I showed everybody I made the number three for John. No one can see me do this. I just want to make sure that I've never stopped using hand gestures and other things when no one can see me. But continue.
Yeah. It's kind of, you're just in your little dungeon doing your own thing, doing the whole, if a tree falls in the woods, no one can hear it. That's Brad. So yeah, three Space Hulks appear. The Salamanders are the closest and they rush to help out.
How they do this, though. Because they send teleport assaults from Terminators inside the Space Hulks. Man, this is crazy. Because, again, Space Hulks are not just big ships. Space Hulks are massive, massive. Yeah,
and the problem is that because it's Salamanders, this is why they have such a high casualty rate. These Space Hulks have appeared in the system. These Space Hulks are going to demolish the local population. If the Salamanders don't do something about this, huge issue. So Salamanders go, all right, we can't blow the Space Hulks up from just the outside. We have to double hit them inside and outside. And they send, to Brad's point, Terminators inside, where it is all of the Yorks, by the way.
So they know that they're probably not coming back. This is, if you haven't watched Secret Level, they have a similar-ish mission where they don't think they're coming back. This is what they're sending them on. This is why Marines are also badass, because they do shit like this.
They blow up the Space Hulks and effectively save the population, but the Orcs aren't done. The Orcs decide, all right, I've lost my Space Hulks, because Ruck Ripper realizes, hey, I need to have all the Orcs behind me, and so I got to show off. So then he goes, I don't need my Space Hulks. We're going to go destroy this city. And this next part's just a badass story. They land. It's an Ecclesiarch planet. They land and begin just beeline towards the main center. And the thing about Orcs is, as much as I love them, they're not the smartest. As they're rushing through the city, they don't notice two key things. One, there's no one in the city except for some defenders.
So I would say if you're going to number these, number two would be slightly more important, because that would be the smell of promethium everywhere.
Everywhere. The salamanders planned for this, and they'd evacuated the populace, and the only people in this city were effectively suicide fighters who were sitting there. They knew they were going to die, and their job was to keep drawing the orcs in. Once the orcs get to the center of the city, the salamanders had filled every gutter and all of the sewers. Basically, anywhere you could get promethium to flow with promethium, which, again, is an actual thing in reality and a different thing in 40K. You can look up promethium. You have to Google promethium or promethium 40K, because they're same word, different things. Anyway,
promethium in 40K is way cooler. Continue.
It is. They light the whole city on fire.
And it goes big boom. Big bada boom.
So go salamanders. But still not done. Another 2,000 years go by. They're doing well. They're building up. And this time the High Lords of Terra come calling. But not in a bad way. Usually when you say High Lords of Terra are calling, it means that you're all going to die. No, the High Lords of Terra had a special mission that really only the salamanders could do. Gene Stealer cult have arisen in what's called the Ymargal sector. And this is a really important sector. It's got a lot of imperial manufacturing, all this stuff. They cannot afford to send the Death Watch. They cannot afford to send other chapters, because they will destroy these planets. They needed to send a chapter that would go here and purge the genes to the
cult. Dig them out. And this is, they don't want this. Everybody else that would have came here and have been like, this place is clearly corrupted. Let's just make it not a place anymore.
Yeah, everyone else would have just gone, well, that planet's not going to be on the map any further.
Yeah. This place is screwed. See you later.
Yeah. Problem solved. And so the salamander spent 2 years on Ymargal and the moons around it, hunting down every last piece of the genius of the cult. And this is not easy, because the patriarchs of the Ymargal are kind of super patriarchs. I mean, the broodlords, patriarchs, they're super. And this is not easy to do. The salamanders take massive losses, but they are successful. They do. The second company is effectively removed because of this incursion, but they solve it, which is cool as shit. But unfortunately, 5 years later, Nocturne gets invaded.
Out of nowhere, by the way.
Yeah.
A warp smith. Well, he's pretty awesome, because he's got Soul Smelter is his name.
Well, his name is Soul Smelter, which is just good job. I usually crap on GW for the naming mechanics. I like Soul Smelter. Soul Smelter is a good, for a warp smith, that's a good one. And Soul Smelter
this makes me mad on the game, on the table itself, because they're invading, a demonic incursion's going in a Nocturne, and Nocturne's on the verge of falling. The chapter master agrees, hey man, we should stop fighting with one hand tied behind our back and open up the armory, the real armory, the reliquary. Yeah.
It's the Princess Bride, where he's fighting left-handed. Yeah. I'm actually not left-handed. And then they flip to the other side. They grab all of the master-crafted weapons. They're just hanging out, by the way, on Nocturne, and wreck this invasion in 10 hours.
Yeah. You're like, hey, man, why aren't we using this stuff all the time?
Yeah. What I like about this, by the way, is that after they're done, they collect all the demon engines and what's left of Soul Smelter's body, shove it in something and fire it into their son.
Just because F you.
Yeah. From there, one of the greatest, more, we can skip the Badab War because we covered that enough. Yeah. But I also want to cover the Wars of Armageddon, the second and the third. And in both of these, salamanders play really critical roles, but in a goofy way. So Second War of Armageddon is Gosgol's first appearance. He leads this incredible orc invasion into the world Armageddon, which is the Segmentum Solar.
Which he is does this because, actually Olinar.
It was Olinar, which was not in Segmentum Solar, but the Mechanicum teleported it to the Segmentum Solar to A, make it easier for them to pillage the orc technology, and B, to make it look like they did blow up Olinor like they were told to do. Anyway, Gaz comes in like a freight train to the system and is wrecking shop. And to the credit of the Imperium, they handle it well. They send Blood Angels, Ultramarines, Imperial Guards. They learned from War of the Beast. We are not having that happen again. And it's becomes quickly obvious the Blood Angels and the Ultramarines decide this war ends now. And they're just firing everything they can at it and don't care about the collateral damage. They also seem to care about the citizenry that are there. And so the citizens who are in the Armageddon sector, which is a massive hive world, by the way, are really up the creek without a paddle because they're either getting attacked by orcs or getting attacked by orcs who then get attacked by the Imperium, which then blows them up until.
To be fair, you've got a lot of people that are not being protected because of the fact that it doesn't make tactical sense if you're trying to break the specific, you know, hey, we need to cut off the head of the snake. So people like Bobby G just go, yeah, this doesn't make any, you know, people like Bobby G because it's Ultramarines. They're making those decisions of, yes, is it bad for the populace? Doesn't make tactical sense though for, you know, us. The salamanders took offense to that and said, hey man, we should probably not let trillions of people die to achieve our objective.
It's not really a cool move. And that's exactly, and the salamanders take up a rear guard action. They start protecting the shipping lanes. They're organizing evacuations. They actually shield the Imperial citizens from harm, losing a ton in this process. But what's cool about the story is that after the war concludes, the Blood Angels and the Ultramarines have a ton of glory from it. The writings talk about this, but the people of the Imperium, especially of this region, love the salamanders because all these stories start coming out about how the salamanders would keep the orcs at bay in less defended areas. They would also, because they were there, the Blood Angels and the Ultramarines wouldn't just orbital bombard them type scenario. And so all these people survive. 58 years later, though, Gaz returns and because he wants it again. This time, the salamanders are much more aggressive because the salamanders send in all of the salamanders. All seven companies are deployed in Armageddon Part 3. Yeah. And I like this part because in the first one, they were really famous for saving the citizenry. And they decide, we're just going to do that again. But even more so. First thing they do is they all seven companies come in. And this basically blunts the assault of Gaz, buying time for the other Space Marines to get there. When the other Space Marines get there, though, the salamanders start, they go back to this rear guard action, trying to protect shipping lanes, saving everybody. They're saying, look, you guys want your glory? Go get your stupid glory. We're going to make sure that this world is still salvageable when this war is over. But the coolest story, one of the coolest stories of it, is the salamanders actually have a little bit of a mini civil war during this. There's another chapter who's called the Marines Malevolent, which is a name for a loyalist chapter, by the way.
Yeah, I was just to say. So you actually named your guys the Bad Marines? Got it.
Yeah. So the Marines Malevolent are guarding a sector, and in that sector, there's a refugee camp, and there's orcs coming down near the refugee camp, and the Marines Malevolent just say, yeah, that's not really worth our time. And they just allow the orcs to
wreck. Yeah, well, they say, like, if we could go fight before they get there, or we could just let them kill those guys, and they'll all be sitting there, and we could just bomb them.
Yeah, which they orbitally bombard them after the orcs slaughter all the refugees.
And Tushan said, I took offense to that.
Yeah, Tushan's the chapter master of the salamanders, discovers this.
Current.
And Yeah, the current. And doesn't really care for this. So he rushes over to the captain of the Marines Malevolent, starts dressing him down. The Captain Marines Malevolent replies back with, well, why would I waste forces on these humans? At which point, Sean knocks him to the ground, actually strikes him, which is, that's big. And the only reason that a full-blown civil war doesn't break out is because, and this is in the Imperial hierarchy, a first founding chapter has rank. And so the Marines Malevolent do not want to get into an engagement with the Salamanders because they know who everyone's going to side with. And
it's also tough when your stance is, yeah, it was inconvenient for me to save people.
So. Yeah. And the other guy's just like, I want to kill you for that. So cool story on the Salamanders. That gets us about to modern 40K. This is where they've been. But again, both Wars of Armageddon, catastrophic losses. The wars with the Gauge, losses, all this stuff. So they're still struggling. We get to M41 and the Salamanders are still a tiny chapter. They actually technically, there should be less than 1,000 of them because they haven't had a second founding. Then we get the Ultima founding.
By the way, the Codex Astartes is still the pirate code because so many of these. Right. You're supposed to have 1,000 Marines. Yeah, that would be inconvenient.
But now with the Ultima founding, the Salamanders are, we're able to have 4 more come out. So now we get to 6 total. You have Salamanders and 5 successors. They've all heavily Primaris. So if you're building a Salamander army, you actually can have more Primaris than really almost anybody else. Well, maybe actually them and the Blood Angels are the 2, I think, because the Blood Angels got wrecked and then they got a bunch of Primaris. But just for the record. So let's talk
about... There's a reason that there's a story called The Devastation of Baal.
It didn't go well.
It wasn't the slightly inconvenient time of Baal.
I do love that story, though, with Ka Banda and them just going, I'm fighting with you for now, but it's so I can kick your
Nobody
ass.
Nobody kills Blood Angels but me.
Yeah, it's just a great moment. But let's talk. I want to close this out. Talk about the successor chapters themselves, because you will see them on occasion. One of them is specific. First of all, we'll start with Black Dragons, are rather unique looking. So Black Dragons. Black Dragons are called Accursed Founding. Now, Accursed Founding doesn't mean it's turned traitor. Accursed Founding just means something's jacked with the GNC.
Yeah, I know it's called, I don't like the fact that it's called cursed. It's just,
I agree.
Hey, there's just a goof in the GNC. They just have a mutation.
So,
it's a cool looking mutation, yo.
Uh-huh. Anyway, I think we both know why I'm going to get crap on this. So the Black Dragons, their cursed gene seed causes them to grow a crest on their head, you know, like thing on lizards, not something any amphibian has, which again, a salamander is an amphibian.
Let it go.
They've got this crest on their head, but they've also got these sharp bones that grow out of their forearms. And I realized they look just like Baraka from Mortal Kombat. So then I had to look that up. And yeah, Mortal Kombat predates this lore. Not saying it's an IP violation intentionally. I'm just hinting that it is. Not every Black Dragon has the Baraka arm swords. Only some of them do. The ones that have
them, the Dragon Claws, my friend.
Yes, they're assigned almost like Death Company, but not with the negative of like, oh, well, you're all going to be dead in like 7 hours sense. But they moved into their own group within the Black Dragons called the Dragon Claws. Whatever.
But by the way, they consistently move away from the Inquisition because the Inquisition constantly is investigating them because they look like they're chaos mutated. And yes. But they're super loyal. And so they never.
Well, they're also super weird, though. Hold on. It's not just that. It's not just that they look chaos mutated. They're high chaplain.
They have a couple eccentricities about how they go about things.
Yeah, their high chaplain, who's kind of runs the whole thing, sits on a throne of bones. They can have their rites of the bone, rites of the claw. In fact, the people who have the bone appendages get their armor modified so everyone can see they've got these extra bone appendages, which for the record, it's just bone. It's not as sharp or as tough as any of the melee weapons the Space Marines carry.
No, it's pointless, but it looks cool.
Useless. Yeah, looks cool as hell, but whatever. That's the Black Dragons. They are, but that being said, it does give you an option. If you have the ability to either green stuff or 3D print, you can make some pretty cool looking black
dragons. They also have mantles on the back of them. So
And they did, one of the lores, they did get a bunch of Primaris Marines. They then added in the black dragon gene seed, and they all grew in the spurs as well. So you can do it with Primaris Marines. Now, after them, I want to move on to the Iron Drakes and the Hammers of Nocturne really quickly, because there's nothing on them. No, there's two others.
Hammers of Nocturne have a really cool name, but
But they're in the codex listed as one, but that's about it. Unlike the Black Vipers, who have one of my favorite paint schemes, which is a dark red with black. I just like how that looks. It's me. And the history is that they're salamanders in gene seed only.
This is jacked. I mean, we're going to spend time on these guys, but these are the...
I like it.
Yeah, you like the paint scheme, but these guys don't even know what it's like to be a salamander besides watching like that intro tape that you get that HR sent you to watch, because the guy that was sent to teach the class, the chaplain, never shows up.
But that's why I like it, because it implies something. I like this story. So when Call made all the Primaris Marines, he's notified all the chapters. And on all the chapters, they sent their chaplains to go meet with these new Primaris Marines and teach them all about the history of their chapter. The one who was sent to meet with the Black Vipers never arrived. And so they are salamanders and gene seed only. The reason this is interesting to me is the Black Vipers are most commonly seen near Call.
Yeah, because Call set is him fighting. Up because he wanted to use these guys.
Yeah.
1,000%. That's why I'm not like... Yes. It's fine, but they're so not salamander.
Well, we've got...
They're Call's personal marine force that he uses.
But that's why I like it, because you have the Minotaurs. We don't know where they came from. We're not really sure where the Carcharodons came from. There's a few others that fall into the, kind of these categories. These ones, we know where they came from. But then Call's like, yeah, but I just want to keep some for myself. And the salamanders are really good at fighting, so how about I just do that?
Yeah, but you know what? You know who is cool and knows what it is like to be a salamander? The Covenant of Fire.
The Covenant of Fire are cool. So these ones learned about the Promethean cult and just yelled, "We are all in on this nonstop. This is my favorite thing." And it's amazing. So the Covenant of Fire are known for two things: burning heretics and more burning of heretics. That's all that they want to do. They are obsessed also with the salamanders. Like they of all the successor chapters of every Space Marine Legion, the number one fanboy of their founding chapter is the Covenant of Fire towards the
successor chapter. Yes.
Yeah.
They're like, Vulcan, what are you getting into? We're in. I didn't ask you yet. We're still in.
Yeah, they're like Swifties. It's like everything they do is salamander based. But they're super cool. So Covenant of Fire, they actually join He-Stan when he's on his adventures to find the artifacts of Vulcan. They're always seeking out the lore about their own founding chapter anywhere, along with anything just kind of Imperial lore-wise. But the fun part of them, they're a little itchy with the flamer trigger figure.
Well, you shouldn't be a heretic and you wouldn't have had burn. They also burn anything. Hey, man, that looks like it has something that seems heretical on it. Better be safe. Burn.
And I like this. The Inquisition don't hate them, but they don't like them, because the Inquisition will be on the trail of some, to uncover some great like heresy, some great, you know, mystery. And they hit a dead end because the Covenant of Fire had been there and burnt everything. They didn't, instead of saying, hey, we found some stuff that could be heretical, does the Inquisition want to see it? They just went, if the Inquisition wouldn't want to see this, burn it. So I like them.
Let's go to the next one. These guys are one of my tops and successors on this. I mean, there's not that many. Dragon Spears.
Dragon Spears are cool.
I like these guys quite a bit because they've got some pretty good stories. They're in a lot
It's because they were with the Space Wolves. We both know the real reason.
100%.
Yeah. Nice try, Brad. Yeah, I'm not letting you set that up any further than that. I know where you're going. Oh, these guys are the most important ones. Everyone should like them the most. Oh, they happen to spend time with the Space Wolves. That's not important to Brad. Gosh, such a homer. Anyway. The Dragon Spears are super cool because they, before they joined the Salamanders, for whatever reason, they were fighting next to the Space Wolves for a while in an area called the Narian Reef to stop an orc incursion. So the Dragon Spears are expert orc hunters, which is kind of normal and makes them a great addition to the Death Watch. But there's another thing they do. They eat their dead, which is, odd. And GW does call it endocannibalism, which is the correct term for this, but it's still weird. So endocannibalism, if you don't know, that's not like when you eat a body. It's when like you have someone die and then you cremate them and then you like sprinkle the cremation on top of a hot dog and then eat the hot dog.
Well, I mean, Space Marines are supposed to be able to absorb stuff, but they just kind of wrote that out. So,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. If you didn't listen to our episode where we mocked the gene seed system pretty hard. Yeah. So Space Marines and Kroot both can absorb the memories of something by eating it. GW has written about this almost never because it's, I'm sure in 1988 was a really cool idea, but now it's just lame.
Still canon. Still canon.
But so the dragon spears do that. They do this to preserve the memories of all of the prior dragon spears within the Legion. So yeah, when you die and you're a dragon spear, you're turned into corpse starch and then eaten.
Let's go into the, sorry, I'm getting ready for, I can only assume you were tired, drank too much caffeine right before bed, and then just got super psyched up about who
the
I
dark thought. Krakens? No. We're doing the purple squids. We are doing purple squids of 40K. The dark Krakens rock. The story is actually hilarious. It's just a weird story.
It
the
is dark a Krakens, wild white dwarf that came out.
Yeah.
And they just went, hey, this is what's going on. You're like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. White Dwarf 466 for the record. The Dark Krakens come from, this makes no sense, by the way, because they're a Primaris successor, but they also come from a world called Noctis. How we got this world? Don't know. What about the history of Noctis? Not much, except for this one thing. It's basically an ocean world with
one island.
It's New Zealand. And it's not even a big one. It's basically you have New Zealand and then the globe. And the ocean is just badass. It's made of bio. That's
there's
what they wrote there.
No reason to be here, by the way.
Yeah.
It is an island in the middle of monster sea creatures that only want to kill you. And they're like, we're setting up shop here, man.
You missed the part. It's bioluminescent megafauna. Glowing. Giant sea predators.
My bad.
Yeah. And the native population settled it and they just hunt the animals for sport and food because, of course, they do. But the Dark Krakens, who are the local Space Marine chapter there, also do that when they're bored. They go into the ocean and hunt down the giant predators. Then, to make things even weirder, the Dark Krakens paint fish emojis all over their armor and their vehicles, like a hammerhead
just
shark.
No reason to be here.
Oh, this
has
whole thing,
no resources that you want.
And it makes no sense because you look in the white dwarf, and what are the sea creatures they're doing? It's a hammerhead shark, a lobster claw, a sea snake. This is a planet millions of light years from Earth, and somehow has all the same fish.
It's fantastic.
They just do it. Also, they use different terms. They actually don't call themselves sergeants. They call themselves I'm the hammerhead of this chapter. Like, it is so wild and weird, but I have to give the white dwarf credit because they wrote something really stupid and weird. And I'm like, all right, I'm in. Let's do this. So anyway, that we close with some force. That's a good place to stop. So next week will be Christmas. So we want to go hard. And this is the number one requested thing we've had in the Discord. We're going to do Lieutenant, Captain, back to Lieutenant, back to Captain Demetrius Titus. Space Marines. Yeah, Space Marines 1 and 2. I don't know if it's going to be one episode or two. I haven't written a word of it yet. So
there is zero chance that this is going to be one episode when you have two video games worth of stuff and multiple short stories.
You'd be surprised.
You're like, I got bored.
Titus was here. Titus is over there now. Look, Titus is traitor. Titus, not traitor. Titus, maybe still traitor. Definitely Titus, not traitor. There you go. That's the entire two casts. I'm kidding, guys. I'm actually excited for this one. Titus is super badass because you know why? He's an ultramarine. That's why you're going to get two casts.
That's exactly why not.
All right. Well, that'll be fun. So until next week, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
Take care, everybody.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.